Greetings, and welcome to this ISRN event, Breaking New Ground, Forming Research Collaboratives to Conduct Improvement Studies. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce Dr. Darpan Patel.
Thank you, Claudia. On behalf of the Improvement Science Research Network, I'd like to welcome everyone to today's webinar entitled Breaking New Ground, Forming Research Collaboratives to Conduct Improvement Studies. Again, my name is Darpan Patel, and I'm the Project Manager for the Improvement Science Research Network, also known as the ISRN. We are excited about unveiling two of the ISRN's network studies. I'm glad to see that you share our enthusiasm by your attendance today. In fact, we will poll the audience in a few minutes to get a better sense of who has joined us today. We also welcome your thoughts on other topics we could address that are of interest to you. At the end of today's session, you will be asked to complete a brief evaluation form. Please be sure to give us your feedback, since your comments will help us plan for future events. While we don't anticipate any technical problems, I'd like to give you a few tips in case you experience any difficulties. Next slide, please. For help, please notify the VCall attendant through the questions window. If you have trouble with the slides or have problems with your connection to the web event, I encourage you to press F5 to refresh your screen. Also, this webinar is being recorded. A download of this recording, the slides, and a transcript will be archived on the ISRN website soon after. If you'd like to download the slides today, you can find the PDF file at the bottom of the presentation window. Next slide, please. Note that you could submit questions at any time through the questions window at the bottom of the presentation screen, as pictured in this screenshot. We will be able to answer some of your questions following our speaker's presentation. Before I turn the program over to them, I'd like to get a sense of who has joined us today in the audience. Please answer the polling question you see on your screen describing your role among the categories listed: frontline clinician, nurse management, educator clinical, faculty academic, research scientist, or other healthcare professional. The information presented in this web event will be useful to a broad array of participants, but it's helpful to know who has joined us today. From the results, our top three participant categories are research scientist, faculty academic, and other healthcare professional. We welcome you all. The purpose of today's web event is to provide information about the ISRN network studies for participants who share our enthusiasm for conducting breakthrough improvement research. Today's presentations will focus on the frontline engagement in quality improvement and medication error prevention studies. We plan to hold a future web event on the team performance for patient safety in the near future. We encourage you to consider joining one, two, or all of these study collaboratives. Directions on how to become involved are included at the end of this web event. These landmark studies fill an urgent national need for rigorous improvement research. They will generate groundbreaking evidence and definitive answers to priority questions in healthcare delivery. As you listen to the presentation, think about how these studies could fill a gap in or augment current research projects at your current organization. Think about your organization's stakeholders or leaders who you could approach to suggest improvement or involvement in a network study. If you are one of these leaders, consider the numerous benefits of engaging in a research collaborative, which include access to ISRN resources, experienced researchers, and well-known thought leaders, the opportunity to network with like-minded colleagues and learn from other organizations, capacity-building assistance, and the ability to increase the professional skills and knowledge of healthcare workers at your organization. Now, I am delighted to introduce our two speakers for today's session, Dr. Kathleen Stevens and Dr. Lily Thomas. Dr. Kathleen Stevens is a professor of nursing at the University of Texas Health Science Center in San Antonio. She is the founding director of the Academic Center for Evidence-Based Practice and is a fellow of the American Academy of Nursing and the Academy of Nurse Educators. Kathleen is a principal investigator for both the Improvement Science Research Network and the Frontline Engagement and Quality Improvement Network study. Our second speaker, Dr. Lily Thomas, is the vice president of system nursing research at the North Shore Long Island Jewish Health System. In her current role, she is responsible for developing and implementing strategies to promote nursing research and evidence-based practice across the health system. Dr. Thomas will serve as a principal investigator for the Preventing Medication Errors Network study, which she will describe during her presentation. But first, Kathleen, I'd like to turn the session over to you.
Thank you, Dr. Patel, for explaining how the Improvement Research Network has launched three network studies. The studies are indeed at various stages of development. It's actually possible that listeners and members might engage their agency and site in all three studies as we unfold them. But first, for today, we'll talk about two. As one of the first three ISRN-supported network studies, the particular study I'll focus on emphasizes frontline nurses. Let me outline the idea for you. Nurses are indeed the largest sector of the healthcare workforce, making up most of what human factor experts call the sharp end of the healthcare system, the segment in direct contact with patients. This is especially true in hospitals, the sharpest, most hazardous site of patient care, where 62% of nurses, 1.62 million, were employed in 2008. Nurses are thus well positioned to be leaders on interprofessional teams in the ongoing transformation of American healthcare, triggered by the release of the 1999 report from the Institute of Medicine that we've all heard, "To Err is Human." To engage frontline nursing staff in transforming healthcare, we've proposed the following study: Small Troubles, Adaptive Responses, Fostering a Quality Culture in Nursing. We also refer to it as STAR 2. The study goal is to leverage nurses' intimate knowledge of their local patient care system and its weaknesses into nurse-led organizational learning that will indeed provide improved quality and efficiency. In most hospitals, this opportunity for frontline nurses to serve as a loci for organizational learning goes wasted. In the next slide, we present a larger context looking at the potential contribution to safety and quality and how it's embedded in a very difficult context. We have in nursing endemic shortages of nursing staff and difficult working conditions. These raise substantial barriers on the path to quality improvement. Nurses face increasing workloads, distractions from bedside care, lack of autonomy, and sometimes indifferent administration. Significant barriers all to the delivery of effective and safe care. These structural features of nursing work are our targets for improvement. To add to this context, small troubles during a work shift are plentiful. For example, no linens on the unit at 9 p.m. when skin care is scheduled. Frontline nurses respond with workarounds to get through the day. This is not ideal. A better response is a system fix because it has the potential to correct the problem and avoid later recurrence, even increasing patient safety. In the next slide, two major features of the background are identified. Most adverse events in healthcare originate from small process failures. These are common enough to be taken for granted, even reinforced as we teach our incoming new nurses to work around. Although these process failures include both errors and problems identified as task interruptions due to glitches involving people or equipment, problems are far more common yet draw less attention. We study in great depth the errors, but not the problems. In fact, problems occur about once per hour per nurse on hospital units, and 95% of these problems are managed through workarounds rather than system fixes. How problems are managed, therefore, are an important determinant of a hospital's organizational culture for quality of care. The implications for practice is that addressing small problems will drive transformation, creating an organizational learning environment that is sensitive and responsive to latent failures, removing the small hassles that sap the morale and efficiency of an already overextended nursing workforce. In the next slide, you'll see an example of a workaround. I'll quote it for you. We never told the pharmacy when we got a dose of medicine that was more than we requested. We just squirted out the extra because we figured they were busy, they had not intended to make the mistake, and they wouldn't do anything about it anyway. This is an actual quote from a study that Anita Tucker conducted in 2008. In the next slide, you'll see that the rest of the story and part of the awareness comes through. It was sad, really, because we weren't letting them have the information so they could fix their own problems. This exemplifies a treasure in every error, meaning an opportunity to learn from every failure. While workarounds are common, even encouraged in our current care culture, this approach does not lead to system solutions. Rather, workarounds support continuation of small failures. The broken system continues to operate at the expense of patient safety and efficiency. So a question I have for you in the next poll asks you about your experience of first-order operational failures. In whatever your role, a teacher working through students, a direct care provider, or manager, which of these categories represent problem areas for your unit or work environment? So now that you've answered this, we'll post the responses and have a look at what you, our audience, is feeling as workaround missed learning opportunities. So the next slide will show the results of the poll question. See, this is an example of a small operational failure in which we're going to maybe respond again and resubmit and hope that we'll see the conclusions. There they are. So thank you, technical staff, for getting that done. It looks like we have many, many workarounds or many challenges represented through information and communication, followed by staffing, no small surprise given the context, equipment, and supplies. So these are validating some results that not only Anita Tucker's work and Amy Edmondson's work exemplified, but also, next slide please, in a study that has been already conducted, the Improvement Science Research Study that we're discussing at this point builds on a project that was made possible through funding from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation Interdisciplinary Nursing Quality Research Initiative, or INQRI. Dr. Bob Ferrer and I were co-principal investigators on this project from 2008 through this past month. We call today's project STAR 2 because of the need to extend our STAR 1 work into a broader-based study as proposed through the Improvement Science Research Network. In our Robert Wood Johnson study, we engaged, one, in detecting, and two, in intervening with small troubles. This network study, by contrast, proposes to detect operational failures and engage frontline nursing staff at a later point in generating solutions. Appropriately solving operational failures with system solutions will shift the organizational culture from one where it is normative to solve only the immediate problem to one where it's normative to solve the system problem, a system fix, or a second-order solution. The implication for practice, then, is that addressing small problems will drive this transformation. Next slide. So as a bit of background, more on the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation study, or the STAR 1 study, we did look at the goal of increasing first-order operational failure problem solving to determine if a program of addressing small problems in nursing care can lead to improvements in quality and safety, and to determine if addressing small problems will reduce distractions from bedside care, leading to greater nurse efficiency and improved satisfaction. In the next slide, you'll see our conceptual model that we used in STAR 1 and are extending to the STAR 2 network study. We use nursing units as complex adaptive systems. As described in IOM's Quality Chasm report, there's a growing recognition that healthcare teams behave as a complex adaptive system, that is, a collection of interacting agents, in this case, nurses, physicians, unit clerks, physical therapists, pharmacists, and everyone that shows up on a unit. These people are interdependent so that one person's actions modify the conditions for the other people in the microsystem. So a fundamental principle of complex adaptive systems is that they are best managed by understanding patterns of interaction rather than the characteristics of the individuals within them. In clinical settings, this focuses attention on communication patterns because communication is the pathway to organizational learning, adaptation, and innovation. In the next slide, you'll see a piece of the STAR 1 project, the detection portion, that we call the pocket card study. This was, as you might imagine, a pocket card that nurses carried in their pockets to use as a data collection point for small troubles. What did the detection that they identified, what did this look like in the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation study, STAR 1? On the next slide, we'll see an example of three units where we did the pocket card study for self-detection. You'll see that high among all three units were small troubles categorized as equipment. And then you see a variation across units. Perhaps the green bars reflect your polling in terms of information. So equipment and information, in fact, were highly detected, self-detected. And then you'll see in the orange bar that the staff or the staffing was often identified in one manner or another as problematic, as something that had to be worked around. So in the next slide, you'll see our emphasis for the Improvement Science Research Network study, or what we're calling STAR 2, really focusing on Phase 1, or the detection. We invite you to join the ISRN Research Collaborative to conduct this STAR 2 study in an initial phase. As an ISRN network study, STAR 2 will look at detection, and following this, we intend to conduct an interventional study replicating STAR 1 practice facilitation. In the next slide, you'll see our anchoring point. The Improvement Science Research Network, comprised of a group of luminary steering council members and also surveying the nation's stakeholders in improvement science research priorities, identified these four categories as main research studies in order to be conducted to address the most critical of questions. So this is one of the first three network studies, STAR 2, was selected because, in part, it addresses directly one of the four research priorities established by the ISRN. In this case, you'll see we think it matches most overlaps with item B, high-performing clinical systems and microsystems approaches to improvement. As you can see, I know that the group is heavily populated in today's discussion with academicians and scientists. We have heavy overlap. These are overlapping and not mutually exclusive topical areas. So moving on with the network study in STAR 2 in the next slide, the questions in the pocket card study will focus on awareness of the frequency and type of problems and compare self-detection with observational detection and examine factors related to self-detection. The initial assessment entails a month-long card study of the frequency and type of small problems encountered in daily practice on the nursing unit. Nurses will record encountered problems on small pocket cards that the study team will review and summarize for presentation to the unit staff and leadership. of particular interest is comparing self-detected operational failures with those like Dr. Tucker did in her observational study. This method will be compared with the historical results that are published by Tucker. In addition to the pocket card data, multiple sources of data will be collected for correlation with self-detection, including data on the unit's patient volume, personnel lists and duty schedules, organizational charts, annual surveys of the nursing work environment that are done within the unit and safety culture, and relevant demographic and nurse characteristics. This phase of the network study sets the stage for the interventional. In the next slide, we see how the interventional will unfold, and as you try this on, in terms of thinking of is this a study that I can partner with an academic setting or partner with a clinical setting, you'll know that we're looking in phase one at medical surgical hospital units. We'll match these on several key variables that will be informed by the Robert Wood Johnson grant that we did. And in the second phase, the dream is to, and the hope is to, randomly allocate these units to either facilitated or non-facilitated clinical units, facilitation being a standardized intervention to facilitate the engagement of frontline nursing staff in creating system fixes, that is, we term these as quality improvement projects. The timeline in the next slide identifies that we have still developmental stages to go through. We know for a fact that we launched this project in July of 2010 at the Improvement Science Research Network's first Improvement Science Summit. And you'll see the investigative team there. The network study protocol will be reviewed by the ISRN Scientific Review Committee. IRB approval will be a major accomplishment for both the network and the study sites. And activating the network collaborative to identify site investigators and train study sites, giving you full support with training modules and everything from crossing the T to dotting the I on how to implement and conduct this study, and of course gaining IRB approvals at the local sites. So if we don't set a goal, you know, we end up sort of not having these blanks filled in. We are looking at launching phase one pocket card studies this March and invite you to think about becoming part of this activated research collaborative. And anticipate that once we get the detection portion done, we can launch an intervention study in January of 2010. If this fits some of the concerns that you might have about practice settings that you're in, either as an academician or a clinician, then do plan to engage with us as we fill in these blanks and continue to evolve this network study through this important national initiative. It's now my pleasure to invite Dr. Lily Thomas, who is joined by Patricia Donahue Porter in as network principal investigators, to present the second network study that you might be interested in. First of all, I have to compliment Lily and Patricia in that they exemplify the academic practice partnership that the Improvement Science Research Network really hopes to achieve. Their study now on preventing medication administration errors. Lily?
Thank you, Dr. Stevens. Hello and welcome, everyone. I'm Lily Thomas from North Shore LIJ Health System, also the member of the ISR and Steering Committee, as well as PI for the study, as Dr. Stevens said. I also want to acknowledge Dr. Porter. She's an associate professor and program director for the doctoral program at Adelphi University School of Nursing. She's in the room with me and will also be available to answer any questions that come up at the end of the presentation. So my purpose today is to provide a high-level overview of the proposed landmark study on preventing medication administration errors. Along with the lit review, we have had several discussions with colleagues across the country and know that efforts to design solutions are underway. The efforts are under the banner of research studies as well as PI, and we hope that many of you will hear the call today and join hands with us to find solutions. Number one, by sharing your findings, and number two, participating in the study. Certainly, the synergy will make it richer, and I hope we can hand over one less problem to our next generation of nurses. I'm sure you'll agree with me. Next slide, please. So to go over the background, all of you know that medical errors continue to occur, and medication errors are the most frequent type of errors in hospitals. I know the audience here is familiar with the first quality CASM report, which identified med errors are a significant cause of morbidity and mortality, and the conclusion was that a typical patient would be subjected to one error per day. And not all errors are detected or reported. But the most important point I want you to focus on is that 96% of these errors are preventable. Next slide, please. So we know nursing work is complex, and there are several time motion studies that were done which found that nurses spent anywhere from 17% to 27% of their work time preparing and administering medications. Think of that. Almost a quarter of their time is spent on meds. In several studies, nurses identified that medication administration is the most interrupted activity and held it accountable for errors. So we are talking of a high volume and high risk activity when we talk about medication errors. Next slide, please. So several studies validate nursing perception regarding interruptions. One example is a recent study done in Australia that associated interruptions with an increased risk of severity and medication administration errors. It demonstrated a significant association between the occurrence and frequency of interruptions and the incidence of procedure failures and clinical errors. As you can see, each interruption was associated with a 12.1% increase in procedure failures and a 12.7% increase in clinical errors. Several studies mimic these findings. Another study published in JAMA by McGillis and group, you know, introduced another facet of interruptions, that is that about 11% of their interruptions could improve patient care, were actually relevant information that was introduced. So other studies have focused on interruptions in identifying the type of interruptions, the source of interruptions, as well as the frequency of interruptions. So when you continue to look at interruptions, next slide, and Dr. Stevens had already mentioned Dr. Tucker's work on interruptions and failures, procedure failures, we found that nurses experience an average of 8.4 work system failures. And most of these work environment issues interrupted patient care and increased the risk for errors. So you can see also the evidence review that we know majority of the studies have concluded that interruptions have a negative impact on performance as well as emotional responses. And emotional responses include annoyance at being, you know, interrupted, also having anxiety and stress related to the interruptions. But there are a few which found no significant relationships and also some positive aspects of interruptions. So all in all, we can say that many of the differences can be attributed to definitions, context, and method. Next, we have a question for you regarding interruptions. Are the interruptions an issue in your workplace? So you have a chance to answer that question among this audience. So while we are waiting to see the answer, we will go over to the significance. So it's taking a minute to get the answer. Okay, so let's see. Yes, the answer is 75% of you have answered yes, and others have said no, as well as not sure. Well, we hope to delve in deeper. Next slide, please. So looking at the significance, what is the significance of this proposed study? So analysis of meta-errors have revealed that about one-third of these errors occur during the administration phase. And nurses do safeguard up to 86% of all the errors made by others in providing medications. Yet, when it comes to medication administration, it has few safeguards because it is the last step in the process. Also, many studies have identified a second victim phenomena, telling us that the impact of errors are not limited to patients and families, but also to nurses themselves. And several studies say that this is because this is attributed to the embedded principle of accurate med administration. We have learned so many things about medication administration, 5 rights, now 7 rights. So it's so deeply embedded in nursing that whenever errors happen, it threatens the professional self, jeopardizing identity and livelihood, which gives rise to this phenomenon. And we know, as we are standing right now, and we are anticipating nursing shortages, and we cannot let that happen, and we should really focus on preventing such impact on nurses. Next slide, please. So in summary, while healthcare literature indicates interruptions contribute to medication errors, we found that the definition of the terms have not been standardized. Many studies have used the terms interruptions and distractions interchangeably, and we have also noted other additional terms, such as intrusions. We need to be cognizant also of the impact of culture. Several studies have done in international setting, and culture can introduce additional variables that increase or mitigate the risk for medication errors. There are also methodological issues, such as sample size, and as well as the methodology, the type of observation that was done. So there are multiple issues related to that. Therefore, we hope to do this landmark study, which will address many of these issues, and so that we may not have to revisit the fact of, you know, what interruptions do, and we can go on and build further on the study that is done. Next slide, please. So interruptions certainly are interesting, and looking at and reviewing the process of interruptions, what happens while we get interrupted? The same sensory process or pathway is used for both the interruption as well as the primary task, which requires the individual to address two inputs requiring the same physiological mechanism. So what happens in essence then, of course, the original task or the primary task has to be stopped, which is put back in memory, and then you start, you know, dealing with the task with which you were interrupted. So what happens is the current task is now placed in prospective memory, and the ongoing task becomes placed in the ongoing memory, which you can see in the next slide that, you know, it is found that when you place something as intention to act or in prospective memory, it becomes vulnerable. So often what happens when you go back to the original task, there may be a delay, or you may require some cues in the environment or within yourself to go back to that task. And many times what happens, as you may have seen in many errors that have happened, is there's not the same level of engagement when you go back to the original task, and therefore is the chance for errors. Next slide, please. So the next slide, you know, we see a picture. And it is said that a picture is worth 1,000 words, but yet I do not know if we have truly captured what goes on. What happens when there is cognitive overload? What is too much? So we know that nursing work is complex and nurses multitask. Healthcare environment is very intrusive. At any given time, a nurse is responsible for multiple patients. At any given time, she's interrupted perhaps by her peers, perhaps by herself, because she's forgotten. She may have left this patient on the toilet and has to go back to that. Or, you know, she's awaiting a phone call from a physician. Or at the same time, there are distractions in the environment, loud noises. Another patient may be calling out in pain. At the same time, she may be fatigued because it may be the third 12-hour shift that she is working today. And also, we have introduced some of that because we know we have to improve access. So we have introduced, say, for example, beepers and phones to improve the access. But we also know what happens with these phones and beepers is it increases the likelihood of being interrupted. So, you know, often some solutions to some will have impact on other things, as we can see. So, next slide, please. So you have already seen the next slide. Dr. Stevens has explained to you what we found in terms of the research priorities based on the survey done, and this is very much in alignment with the priorities of the Improvement Science Research Network. I think we have a delay in going to the next slide. Yes, there it is. And so you can see that we are in alignment. The proposed landmark study is in alignment with the priorities of the ISRN. And, you know, here we have an opportunity to use the infrastructure as well as the process to do a landmark study and to address all the issues that we have seen in other studies and come up with meaningful findings. Next slide, please. So that brings us to the research question. What is the impact of interruptions on medication administration errors? And our specific aims are, what are the organizational factors that contribute to interruptions? What personal factors, inter and intra, contribute to interruptions? I know there are multiple definitions, but we hope to standardize them and look at it so that we have a shared mental model on that. Next slide, please. Some of the other aims include also looking at what are the competing quality, safety, and patient care issues that interfere with medication administration, and how does a nurse prepare a cognitive state that will assist in diminishing the ability to be interrupted? And we know that there are several solutions at hand. But, you know, say for example, you know, right now we have barcoding, we have other things, but there are also workarounds we know. We don't want to mention what they are, but you have heard that. So, therefore, our research plan, next slide please, is going to include a two-phase study. The first phase will be a descriptive correlational study, which will really look at interruptions from all the factors that we listed. And also we are aware that there are multiple solutions, but these solutions may not be equal in all the environments that we are dealing with. Different people have different levels of automation, for example, and several things available to them. So, and some of these solutions have simply located the problem of error or caused delays and, you know, enabled workarounds. And so we need to look at more of the focus is on practitioner. Of course, it will depend on what we'll find on phase one, but we hope to focus on the practitioner to prevent these medication errors. Next slide, please. So the next slide also you have seen, which is the timeline, and you have seen Dr. Stevens explain that. We also have an investigative team that is formulated. That I have Dr. Porter with me on this team, and we have to go through the same template. That means once the protocol is designed, it will go through the approval of the ISRN Scientific Review Committee, and then we have to apply to IRB for approval. And after that is done, there will be information provided for everyone in terms of what are the responsibilities, what needs to be done, and all the aspects will be provided. And we hope to launch it in the first quarter of next year. So in conclusion, I want to say thank you for participating. I hope many of you will join us in the cause of preventing medication administration errors. And I want to turn it back to Dr. Patel.
Thank you very much, Lily. Great presentation. The launch of the network studies provides several benefits, one of which includes the addressing of priority issues in healthcare focused on improving quality and patient safety. Next slide, please. The goal of this portion of my webinar is to introduce the process in becoming a study site for the Improvement Science Research Network studies. For all individuals and institutions that are interested in becoming involved, I'll outline the steps that are needed prior to study startup. I'll conclude my portion of the presentation today by going over the support services the ISRN Coordinating Center has in place to assist site principal investigators and the site coordinators in preparation for the network studies. Next slide, please. In order for a site to be selected as a network study site, the site principal investigator and the study coordinator must be a member of the ISRN. Many of you that are in attendance today may be aware that the window to become a charter member for the ISRN has closed, but it's never too late to become a member. If you log on to our website at isrn.net and click on the Join Now button on the top right corner of the screen, you'll be directed to our registration website. For a breakdown of the fee structure, simply click on the Member Center located on the left-hand navigation toolbar or below the Join Now button for more information. While institutional membership is not required to become active study sites, it is encouraged to allow all your associates at your unit to take or to gain access of all that the ISRN membership has to offer. Next slide, please. In addition to the membership requirement, we ask that all individuals or all institutions that are interested in becoming a study site complete a study site application to indicate your interest. This application, which is currently in development, will be downloadable from the ISRN website and will be available in the early part of next year, which coincides with the timelines that were presented today. The application will ask for simple contact information for the principal investigator and the site coordinator, and simple site facility descriptives such as facility size, the number of beds, and so on and so forth. Additionally, we will also ask for information with regards to the number of individuals you anticipate to be on your study staff, and the contact information for your local IRB. If your site is not affiliated with an IRB, the coordinating center at the ISRN will work with you to identify a central IRB for you to submit your project to. The application that you see an example of on your screen will also include a checklist which will assist you in gathering all the necessary documents and letters that are needed for this application, as well as the directions on how to submit the study site application to the ISRN. Included in this packet are going to be, for example, the application itself, a protocol signature page acknowledging that the site principal investigator has read the protocol, a readiness assessment questionnaire, and the bio sketch for all research personnel involved, just to name a few. There may be some things that we may add or some things that we may take away that will be specific to each and every study, but this checklist will assist you in gathering all the necessary documents that you would need to complete your application. Next slide, please. The Coordinating Center has also put in place some support services to better assist the site in preparation to conduct research. Prior to the start of the study, a protocol training session, also sometimes identified as a site initiation meeting in pharmaceutical research, will be scheduled to ensure that the site understands the requirements of the study and the intricacies of the protocol. Each site principal investigator and study coordinator will be required to attend, and it's assumed that the site PI and the study coordinator will disseminate the information to their study staff. The protocol training session will include a number of things. Specifically, it'll go over an in-depth review of the protocol, such as the inclusion and exclusion criteria and the data collection methods, as well as the data collection tools that will be utilized for the study. It'll also review the processes to enter data online into our ISRN database, as well as how to send the data to our coordinating center. The sessions will be either scheduled as a webinar or a teleconference and will also include the network principal investigator and the coordinating center. Next slide, please. As a means to assist the site in the implementation of the protocol, study-specific toolkits will also be developed for each protocol. These toolkits may include implementation guides on how to accurately and effectively implement these protocols at your site, also include checklists to ensure proper conduct and all the regulatory documents that are needed are gathered. It'll also include data collection materials in the form of surveys and forms that may be needed for data collection, as well as data entry guidelines on how to accurately enter the data into our online database. Next slide, please. As with any study, IRB approval will be required prior to implementation at the site level. As I indicated a few slides ago, the ISRN Coordinating Center will assist the site in getting IRB approval for the study. When the protocol becomes finalized, our network principal investigators, for example, Dr. Stevens and Dr. Lily Thomas, they will submit their protocol to their local IRB, for example, at the University of Texas Health Science Center in San Antonio or Dr. Lily Thomas's facility in New Jersey. Once the principal investigator, the network principal investigator, gets approval from her IRB or his IRB, the protocol will be uploaded onto our ISRN website for site principal investigators to get access to. When the protocol becomes finalized and is accessible, the site principal investigator can do one of two things. The site investigator can submit to his or her institutional or local IRB for review. Or the second option is that the site principal investigator, through his or her local IRB, sign an IRB authorization agreement. An authorization agreement is between two institutions, or specifically two IRBs, where one institution, specifically the site principal investigator's institution, or IRB, relies on the network principal investigator's IRB for the review and continuing oversight of the study itself. This agreement covers all human research conducted by the institution, all human research conducted under institutional federal-wide assurance, and is subject to research studies or a single study itself. The coordinating center is available, as I indicated before, to assist the site investigator in the preparation of IRB applications as needed, and will assist the site investigator in locating a central IRB if needed. Next slide, please. The ISRN is very excited about the launch of the network studies. As a collective, we will uncover solutions to quandaries about quality improvement and how academic practice partnerships can be formed to truly incorporate a team science approach. We hope this presentation was informative, and if you have any questions or you would like to express your interest in becoming involved as a network study site, please contact the ISRN at improvementscienceresearch@isrn.net, and please include in the subject line network study, or you can call the toll-free number 1-888-271-8938. Again, we hope this presentation was informative, and we'd like to thank both Kathleen Stevens and Lily Thomas for introducing your landmark ISRN network studies. We also appreciate the many questions that we've received from our audience thus far. I'd like to get to a few of those if we can right now. The first question I would actually like to address towards Dr. Kathleen Stevens. Dr. Stevens, the question asks, what education or experience does a local study site principal investigator need to have?
Thank you, Darpan, for that, and thank you, audience, for submitting that question. It is what happens at the local scene that really is important. Just to connect it to the national scene, this is an NIH-funded project to create an infrastructure for us, for interprofessional teams led by nurses to improve care for patients, and it is connected to the CTSA programs, for those of you familiar with the Clinical Translational Science Award programs out of NIH. With that said, it's crucial that the local site team has the skills and experience in the fundamentals of research. These are often reflected through a degree. Perhaps an indicator of those skills is that you hold a master's degree. But we also believe very heavily in the academic practice partnership. The academic practice partnership is seen as a huge solution to moving science into direct care, and we see that this is a fundamental principle of the Improvement Science Research Network. So to construct your investigative team to where perhaps the local collaborators has at least one person with a master's degree or with experience in conducting research, and an academic partner, or the academic partner has a practice partner, so that access into the clinical setting is crucial. So partner with doctorally prepared, partner frontline people, the coordinating center here at the University of Texas Health Science Center is here to fill in the rest of the blanks. We have on staff a statistician, and we have access to expert librarian resources. And so the coordinating center is seen as a place to even gain greater capacity. So the infrastructure offers a lot of balance. Locally, we want you to own the study and be excited about the study as a study team.
Thank you very much, Dr. Stevens. The second question, I think, is appropriate for Dr. Lily Thomas to answer. And Dr. Thomas, the question asks, will participation in a network study count towards magnet recognition requirements?
Thank you, Dr. Patel. Absolutely. In terms of magnet criteria, it will be acceptable. And as Dr. Stevens explained about the experience required, and also when we look at the criteria, you know, there has to be an infrastructure in place for clinical research. So even though the study is designed by the network, we are requiring an on-site PI, and all the other activities has to take place in the organization. Therefore, it meets the criteria. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. And I think we have time for one last question. Dr. Stevens, I'll direct this question back to you. The question asks, what will the tasks, roles, and responsibilities of the local study site be in conducting the research?
Well, I would like to begin with reflecting on an experience that I had.
Thank you for your...
And the idea really flows out of a number of things that informed the creation and the proposal of the Improvement Science Research Network. Those of you who have been connected with acute care, with intensive care units, recognize the Thunder Project. And in thinking about how to construct an infrastructure that could move what we know about improvement strategies and whether or not they work, moving those rapidly forward, I was reminded of the story of the Thunder Project, of how there was a question that needed to be answered with a very large population, with a very large sample size. And so the acute care nursing organization sponsored this and rolled out what they call the Thunder Project. So drilling down with that, we would like to see the local tasks really being a very close partner in implementing with full fidelity the protocol, the research protocol, to implement this and to conduct the study within the regulations offered by IRB, to do data collection, and then to upload data. We envision this as being having the landmark study question answered with the collective of data, perhaps 15 sites maybe per network study, and offering for generalization what's known or what was gained across all the sites, and then offering the individual sites the information about their particular data. So it would be very much along the way of creating a local research team, and the secondary benefit would be that this research team can go on and contribute for the agency in additional research projects. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Stevens. And we've had a lot of great questions submitted through this web seminar. However, I'm afraid that we're out of time now, and I'd like to bring this web event to a close. I'd like to thank both our presenters and audience for participating in today's webinar. Again, we value your feedback and hope you could spend a few minutes completing the evaluation form that's about to appear on your screen. As you heard today, these landmark studies fill an urgent national need for rigorous improvement research. I hope you all were able to see how these studies could fill a gap or augment current research projects at your organization. Please visit the ISRN website at www.isrn.net to learn about how you can become involved in these network studies and on upcoming events and other networking opportunities. Thank you and have a good day.